What really gets my dick hard is...
What? You are here tonight as the Metallica family, all right? Yeah! All are welcome. We're all here to celebrate live music and life. Are you with us? Yeah! Are you with us, Philly?
Welcome to Metal Free Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this is episode 23, sponsored by ToneTubby.com, the original hemp cone speaker. Check them out at ToneTubby.com for all your speaker needs. And this episode 23, what we're doing is we're going over the Philadelphia show that Metallica just did that I got to attend.
I have this. You're familiar with this thing called FOMO that the kids are saying.
You
know, the,
you actually texted me that, and I was like, "What is he talking about?" And I actually Googled it. I didn't know.
Well, it's what the kids are saying, not me, but. Fear of missing out. I haven't really felt that feeling in a long time. I'm generally pretty content with where I'm at in my life, and even if my friends are doing great things. And I was out on the road that day in Florida, and I'm not gonna lie, man, I had some real serious FOMO that day.
Well, I'm sorry that my experience heightened that fear of missing out, man.
Well, I was so happy. It was such a funny feeling because I was so happy for you on the one hand, and yet so bummed that I couldn't be there.
You could say pissed off. It's fun.
Well, there wasn't really anger. I wasn't madly in anger with you or anything.
Well, that's good. I hope not.
Yeah, it was cool to see that you had a great time. That we're going to definitely talk about the show and the set list. And
yeah,
I mean, the tour's looking really kick ass so far.
And I mean, yeah, obviously I've seen it firsthand. I can vouch for that 110%. It's a kick-ass tour, and I can't wait for you and I to go to Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit's going to be killer, and they're going to be finely tuned by then. Although, from the footage I've seen, and obviously the concert you saw, they're sounding real good.
Yeah, man, they really are. Definitely, and we'll get into all that stuff. Let's go ahead and start this thing off. We're going to do some pick contest winners, some emails, all that stuff, and then we'll get into the Metallica Philadelphia show.
Right, so if you don't know what our pick contest is, we have Metal Up Your Podcast picks, and we have picks of Ethan and picks of my face. If you leave us a positive review over at iTunes, we give you this stuff for free. We send it to you. And the way that this works is we announce the winners of the week. And if you hear your iTunes username, if you hear those words come out of my mouth in the next few seconds, you need to send us an email at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com with your name and address, and we'll send these picks to you. The winners this week are Riddlin, R-I-D-D-L-Y-N-N, B-T-B-A-M, Rules 310, M-G Rossvener, and N, like the letter N, Justice for All. Those are the weekly pick contest winners.
Congratulations, guys.
We're going to send you guys some free shit.
Clint, tell them what they've won. Wait, you already did.
Oh, wait, I already did that. For those of you who want to get in on the free shit, go leave us that review. It only takes a second.
Yeah,
it really helps us out.
It totally does. We've already started to see a difference. Like now, I notice if I go to the podcast app on my phone and I just type in the word metal, our shows up. So it's helping. What you guys have done is have helped us be seen a little more, so we are grateful.
You leave us a review, tell you what, me and Ethan will literally get into a car, we'll drive to your house, we'll get in bed with you, we'll give you a big kiss.
And then we'll steal all the pizza from your fridge.
And then we will eat everything you have.
All right. And moving on real quick. Jeez. Oh, geez. Speaking of big kisses, we have our social media. You can always follow on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. It's just search Metal Up Your Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. You will find it. You can also email us at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. That's the best way to get a hold of us. And, of course, you can always financially support us if you'd like on patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And speaking of, we have a new patron this week. Mr. Chad Hogg has pledged. We thank you very much, Chad. Every little bit helps.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks, Chad. It's really cool.
Yeah, man.
All you dudes and gals who have done the Patreon thing, we're really grateful for you guys. It's really killer. We're definitely using all that to make more stuff, t-shirts and hats and patches and all that stuff. So
definitely, yeah.
And And I will say we've gotten requests to put all of our crap on YouTube, and I finally did that this week.
Nice work.
So we're all caught up on, if YouTube, for whatever reason, is how you want to listen to the show, we're all caught up there. So
yeah. Yeah, some people listen to podcasts on YouTube. That's totally fine. It's another way to listen to audio. But our preferred method is, you know, or mine personally is just on my phone or my laptop. But hey, to each their own.
Yeah, whatever. However you want the pizza delivered to you is fine with me.
That's right. You're going to eat the pizza. Just delivery method might vary. If you want your That's pizza true. Delivered to MySpace, we can't accommodate you there. Sorry.
Yeah, we need a time machine for that pizza.
Oh man! Well, let's get in some emails of the week.
All right. Are you going first?
I'm starting this one.
Now you do it. You go for it.
I will. I'm going for it right now.
Neato.
This first email comes from Kevin Palmu. Hello, me. Love it. I'll wrap the bat. I like Kevin. I discovered the podcast a few weeks ago and have been catching up in no particular order. I'm looking forward to the gear episode. I'm almost done building my own replica of James's old Gibson Les Paul custom Iron Cross, used so often in the much-loved St. Anger era. He has an unhealthy interest in the subject. Well, that's pretty cool.
Man, that I got to say, other than the snake bite, that Les Paul custom, not the ESP one, but the black Iron Cross.
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite James Hetfield guitar.
It's pretty rad. And now I wonder, Kevin, you could probably shoot us an email at some point and let us know once you finish it. Are you actually a luthier? Are you like cutting the wood yourself? Are you ordering parts and putting it together? Or are you just taking a Les Paul custom and just aesthetically getting it to look like the Iron Cross? Let us know when you finish it.
That, you know why that's a great question? Because if he actually is building this motherfucker, I want him to build me one too.
And Kevin, if you are a luthier, I would like you to build me a Hetfield Explorer snake bite. I can take care of the eat fuck sticker on it, but you could do the rest.
Yeah, that's quite a division of labor there.
It is.
Does he say if it's the black one or the white one that he's making? Because James has he has a black one and a white one.
Yeah, he
doesn't say, does it?
It doesn't say, but I remember seeing the black one a lot in the St. Anger era. It kind of has like the gold on it too.
Well, it's got a racing stripe on it, and then it's got that, of course, an Iron Cross on it. But it's just like a black Les Paul custom. It's so fucking killer. But he's got the white one too, and then he had ESP make replicas. Because, he was going to do, I believe, a Gibson signature, but somehow the deal fell through, so ESP just did it for him.
Thanks, ESP.
All right, that was cool. Thanks, Kevin. Send us some pictures of it when you get done, for sure.
Please do.
Robert O'Rourke writes, "Greetings, duders. Currently listening to this episode. I'm not sure which episode he's... one of the year and a half of lives, I think. Currently listening to this episode, and as with pretty much every episode, I'm eager to chime into the conversation." Oh, yeah, this dude wrote us a lot of good sauce, but I picked out this one in particular. Okay. Remember how I was mentioning Lars, like, spitting into fans' mouths?
Yeah, totally. I saw him do that the other night, by the way.
Yeah. So this dude has a pretty funny anecdote about that. He wrote, "Regarding gross stuff with Lars at shows, ever notice how he'll blow his nose into a towel and wipe all of his sweat on it and then throw it to a fan? I always said to myself, if I'm ever up front for a show, I'll end up being that dude. Sure enough, on April 20th, 2004 at Uniondale," which they're about to play Uniondale again, "I was on the rail and Lars came over to me after No Leaf Clover. He had his towel and did just that. Then he sort of teased the entire section around me with the towel. We all gave him our best war faces. And right as he was heading back to his kit, he tossed it to me. Ha ha. I still have it unwashed and in a place of keepsake."
Ew.
Wow, dude.
I don't know if I would catch that or I would just duck. Like, well, gross, dude. Don't throw that at me.
I do have to say, at a Pearl Jam show once, I caught a bottle of water from Stone Gossard and I kept that in my room for a long time.
Did he blow his nose in it?
And then one night I drank it. No, there was no...
You drank it. You were that thirsty. You're like, fuck it. I'm opening it now.
I just wanted the power of Pearl Jam in me.
How'd it work out for you?
Well, look at me now, of course.
Exactly.
he sent us pictures of the towel too, which I got to say, even if we don't get around to reading your email, we love it when you guys send us these little like anecdotes and stories. We've had a lot of people send us some really, really cool stuff. So
yeah.
I laughed pretty hard at this dude's email. He goes on to say, "Anyway, love the show. And as always, please keep doing what you're doing. I'm stoked to see you guys continually growing. And now with the sponsor, cheers, Bob, AKA Faroe." This is Faroe.
He corrected us and it's pronounced Ferox.
Pharrell, but with all due respect, it's Pharrell.
Pharrell.
Yeah, it will never be Fair Ox.
Sorry, Bob. Sorry, Fair Ox. It's Pharrell.
Sorry, bud.
You can tell your parents that, too. All right, Dave Rotondi writes, "Hey, Ethan and Clint, love the show. Saw Metallica last night at MetLife Stadium, and they were fantastic. You're in for a real treat. The stage is massive." He is right. It's huge. Thanks for doing this podcast. It has prompted me to re-listen to all the albums and go deep into the lyrics. I've been following the band since 1986, and your show has helped me gain a different perspective. You guys were the impetus for me enjoying everything Metallica all over again. Keep up with the great work, and say hi to Dave and Torben." I will definitely pass on the condolences to Dave and Torben. They'd be happy to hear from you.
I'll have to go find Dave. He's in an insane asylum somewhere in a straitjacket.
Yeah, he is.
Talking to himself in a mirror.
I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina today, and Torben, it's beautiful here. Lots of trees and hills. And last time I saw Torben, he was walking up behind the buses with his staff up a hill. So
right.
Hopefully I'll see him later. I'll give him your best, though, Dave.
Yeah, surely he'll probably be napping later. So,
man, we've heard this a lot where the podcast has caused people to really dive deep again in their life into Metallica, as it's done for us too. So that's really cool to always hear.
Yeah, I mean we're all on the same ride.
And absolutely.
Just because we're the dudes putting it out every week. I mean, we're on the same exact ride. I know, dude. I've been listening to Hardwired pretty much 3 or 4 times a day every day for the last several weeks. Can't get enough.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a great record.
Was that the end of that one?
That's the end of that one. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Elizabeth writes, "When you reference the forums, where do I find these? Unsure where to look. Thanks." So when we talk about the forums, we're talking about just the actual official webpage, Metallica.com.
Yeah.
And if you go to Metallica.com and you sign up to be a fifth member, which is free to do, there's like a little tab for forum. And it's a pretty active little community of really, really cool, some really cool folks over there discussing everything. I mean, everything about the band. There's even like a kind of a, I think they call it small talk area, where they talk about movies and religion and politics and whatever.
All sorts of things, cool. Yeah, and also, Elizabeth, when you do sign up for it, I think I actually replied to this email and told her, but anybody who doesn't know what this is or isn't on the forums or a fifth member, you really need to do it because you get access to so much cool stuff. There's already a wealth of knowledge and history on Metallica on their website, but there's so much more once you become a fifth member. It's pretty rad.
Yeah, their fan content is stellar, for sure.
Oh, it blows most bands away. I mean, it's the detail going all the way back to the beginning is unreal.
I don't know if any of those people over at HQ listen to the show, but if they do, just thanks for all that. Obviously, a lot of love and hard work goes into that. So,
yeah, definitely. Thank you. We are grateful. Our next email is from Nick Roller. Nick, he's also a patron on Patreon. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for doing a year in the life. Definitely my favorite Metallica slate of history. Also quite partial to Cunning Stunts, which I hope is discussed at some point. Yes, we will do a Cunning Stunts episode. We've talked about it somewhat recently, that it will be coming up soon.
Yeah, and that's the Load era touring, so that's my favorite. So needless to say, yeah, we're definitely going to be talking about that. I love it.
For sure.
John Sturm writes, "Hey, Ethan. Hey, Clint. Loving the show immensely, not only because your love of the band is apparent, but also you take a balanced approach to the band, too. As I'm sure you've seen over at the Met forums, oftentimes balance when assessing the band can be, well, pretty absent." Well, he's right. It's like any fan message board. It runs the gamut of fans.
Absolutely.
There's some reasonable people. There's some not reasonable people. There's some people that are really excited. There's some people who are really bummed. It's true.
Yep.
He says, "I'm working my way through your catalog and will definitely definitely be emailing you to participate in the listener's mailbag, hopefully. Just wanted to let you know how much I like the show and enjoy delving into Metallica geekdom with you." Cool. Oh,
thanks, and John.
This dude, John, and I mentioned earlier when you guys send us cool stuff, he actually sent us I guess it was like a Dropbox link. I haven't been able to open it yet, but of a bunch of like demos and rarities and cool little like nuggets, Metallica nuggets.
It's really cool, yeah.
It's his way of kind of saying thanks for the show. So we love that kind of stuff. If you've got cool stuff like that, we check that email every day.
Oh, yeah. Multiple times a day.
So thanks, John, for all that cool stuff. We're glad you're on the ride.
Yeah, John. Our next email is from Brad Blazik. A couple questions from the Setlist podcast. What is burning it down and trash canning a song? I like it when you guys use insider terminology on the shows. I've always liked behind-the-scenes stuff like that. That's his first question. Basically, trash canning the end of a song is when you hit like the last note of the song and kind of ring it out, like keep it going, keep hitting your guitar on that one note, the crowd's going crazy. That's kind of a trash can ending. Like you just, I don't necessarily know where the term trash can came from, but maybe because it's just like a, I wouldn't describe the noise as like garbage. I don't know where the term came up with. Either way, it's just taking that last note and extending it.
I don't know the origin of it either, but I got to say, like, I use it very often in sessions and in live situations, like hit a big trash can at the end. Like when we're trying to decide what to do at the end, are we doing a trash can or are we doing a sting or, you know,
right.
Stings when you hit a cymbal and you hit it and it's done. Instead of trash can, you're just kind of continually hit the cymbals. Burning it down just means when you go through something. So like right now we're burning down the email portion of the show.
Exactly.
Which just means we're doing it.
We are doing it.
I don't know. I don't know the origin of that phrase either.
That's all right. I mean, it's just, I think that's kind of more just, slang for going through something. You're reading a book. I just burn it down.
I just burnt down the bridges of Madison County.
Yeah. He also says, goes on to say, Clint saying there'd be a circle pit in my underwear had me howling. Oh, geez. And then he goes on to say, why weren't Dave and Torben invited to the recording? I need 75% more Torben in my life. Thank you so much. I think that episode we didn't really do Dave and Torben. So not on purpose. It just, they just didn't show up.
Well, I'll say this, man. We got a long way to go on this podcast. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. If you guys are in this with us, these jokes are going to come and go and take on their own thing. And
oh yeah, new characters about.
New characters showing up, and God, we are so funny, dude.
We're hilarious, man. Jeez, I should recategorize this podcast on iTunes under comedy because it's
just straight comedy.
Yeah. I think you're cool with that. So
it's basically George Carlin, Bill Hicks, Louis C.K., Metal Up Your Podcast.
Yeah, totally
in that order. Nuno, thanks for the email, Brad. Nuno Custodia, who wrote, I think he wrote to us last week too. He asks, are you guys thinking of eventually making videos of the podcast, or do you prefer to keep it audio only? I ask you this because sometimes, maybe when sharing memorabilia, it would be cool to make videos. Once again, greetings from Portugal.
Maybe. I mean, we've definitely talked about doing like a little exclusive videos for like YouTube or maybe Patreon, where it's us maybe covering a Metallica song, but maybe he's talking about actually having just a camera recording us doing the podcast.
Yeah, I think he is. And I think that would actually be pretty cool if we could figure out how to do it.
It'd be cool. It wouldn't necessarily be hard. It's just a little more time consuming on the post end of things. But, it might get a little tough, like in this situation where you're at home and I'm in North Carolina. We'd both have to have a camera recording and then edit those together and sync the audio and stuff like that. But it's a possibility. Maybe not right away, but at some point, maybe so.
Yeah, that would be fun. Thanks, Nuno.
Thank you, Nuno. Pork Hunter 22. Hi, cheers for the podcast. Listen every week, and it never fails to make me go back and listen to those classics I haven't heard in a while. Short and sweet email. Thank you, Porkhunter22. We agree, and it makes us do the same thing.
It's a good excuse to go check out some stuff, right? Like,
yeah, man, for sure.
We're talking about Kill 'Em All this week. I'm gonna just go burn it down. There's your burn it down phrase.
Yeah, totally. And there's actually like on Kill 'Em All. There's actually a trash can intro. So
that's true. Look at that.
Hit the lights, man.
God, man, we're just the circle. Yeah, circle of topics on this.
Brad Blazek, just go back and listen to the intro to Hit the Lights, and that's basically what a trash can thing is. It's just ringing it out and noise, and then, before you end or begin a song.
I wonder if Metallica calls it trash canning. I don't think they do.
I don't know.
Their terminology for when they're writing and stuff is pretty funny. Like Lars is like, all right, we take this little guy and put it with this bigger guy. He's talking about totally. Riffs. calls them guys.
Yeah, when James wants to do all downstrokes, he calls it Ramones in it.
Ramones in it, yeah.
I love that's my cool. favorite one.
It's all like right. any band, you just sort of find out your own way to talk about. To get from A to B, you have to have some sort of language, and you just make it up.
Absolutely.
All right, our last email is from Justin Harris. He wrote, hello, podcast.
Hey, Dave, you're back.
Shining bullets. thank you for the awesome show. Look forward to it every Monday for my commute. I was stoked to hear you guys do an episode on a year and a half in the life. Thanks again for covering so much more than just the primary 10 records. Keep up the rad work and giving fans like me a short bit of time to nerd out about our favorite band every week. Very cool. You're welcome, dude.
You are so welcome.
And we're going to do it all. We're doing everything that can be talked about.
Exactly.
Did you guys go check out Alpha Metallica?
Yeah.
I think you did. I think some of you did.
You should. Yeah. We actually got an email from Tom that some listeners have started to embrace him and be part of the Metallica family.
Cool. Yep. And if you guys didn't hear last week, this guy, Tom, started a podcast called Alpha Metallica where he goes through every song alphabetically. So,
very cool idea.
Which that's going to take him like 3 years to do.
Yeah, he's talked about it on a couple of the episodes that it's going to be about a 3-year journey. So, and we've mentioned before, but Clint and I are going to be guests on it during the B section. I'm doing Blackened and Clint's doing Better Than You. And he actually emailed us, I think, yesterday. And it was like, cool, guys. We'll talk in a couple months.
Yeah, I know, man. That's kind of a fun journey. So he's doing every song, but in talking about every song, he's going to end up kind of covering everything. But
Right.
So you got that dude over there. You got us. Because this guy, Justin, saying more than just the 10 records.
Yeah.
That would be a short run of a podcast if we just did 10 episodes and then we're out.
I mean, I suppose if we planned it out that way, we could have done like, you know, like TV does, like 2 seasons. Like season 1 is the record, season 2 is the members or something. But you know what? We like to just roll the dice and figure out what episode's next.
Yeah. What are we, a goddamn sitcom? We're not doing seasons.
Jeez, unless Netflix wants to pick us up.
If Netflix wants to pick us up, we'll do whatever they want.
Exactly. We'll do a Metal Up Your Podcast TV show.
We'll change it completely over to a Megadeth podcast if that's what they want. And I'll have to start listening to Megadeth.
You will.
All right, man. So
let's get into the show I just attended. I mean, as we're recording this, this only happened 3 days ago. And I got to say, man, I'm still buzzing from that show.
Can you kind of like, because I'm privy to the story, but can you kind of, because it is kind of interesting that you just realized that you happened to be in Philly on a day off.
Yeah.
While they were there, it's like it occurred to you. You did not plan it.
I didn't plan it. So basically what happened was like before I left for the tour I'm on, they had their tour announced. I looked at my schedule, looked at their schedule, because that's what I, you know, anytime there's a band I like, I look to see if someone's playing in a city when I have a day off. In this case, I looked at the dates, and for some reason, I overlooked Philadelphia. I think because technically, the show we did was in Camden, New Jersey, which is right across the river.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought my day off was going to be in Camden, New Jersey, and I just didn't think. I don't know. It just didn't pop out. So the night before the show in Philly, we finish the show, pack up, load the truck. I'm sitting out by the bus with some of my friends, having a drink, scrolling through Instagram, and there's a Metallica post about them loading in to the Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. And I was like, holy shit. And my buddy's like, what? I go, Metallica's playing in Philly tomorrow. How did I overlook this? So I immediately go talk to our
bass. All of our listeners are definitely wondering the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I felt like an idiot for like a terrible, bad Metallica fan. So I immediately go to our bass tech, who's old buddies with James's tech. I was like, dude, do you think you could hit him up and maybe we can go to the show tomorrow? And he was like, absolutely, let's do it. He messaged him at like midnight the night before. By the next morning, I wake up in Philly on the bus. I walk in the back lounge. There's our bass tech with 2 thumbs up. He's like, we're in. I was like, sweet. So his buddy Chad hooked it up, got us some floor tickets, which there's no seats down there. It's all standing room, just general admission. And we were going to the show, and I was just like freaking out all day, like texting you and our friend Paul Moe, because like, dudes, I'm going to the show. I think I even texted you at like midnight that night before.
Oh yeah.
But it was, you know. And the thing is, you know, when you're, you know, working for bands and stuff, and over the years you get to know people who know people who know people, etc. It's not that hard to really get a hookup for a show, because someone's going to know somebody,
right?
You know, and this was one of those moments where I happen to know somebody that knows James Hetfield's guitar tech, you know?
Yeah.
And it worked out.
And guess who I know? I know you. So.
And Clint knows me. So.
I'm going to have you go know everybody.
Okay.
And then I'll just know everybody. And then I'll just know you and everything's cool. So what was the, so just because I'm so obsessed with this tour and this band right now, and I have to wait until July to see this band. What was the parking lot vibe with fans? Was everyone excited? Were people tailgating?
Okay, so and Clint and I have talked about, you know, we're going to the Detroit show. We're going to do a parking lot kind of tailgate episode from Detroit. That was the first thing I was looking for, is like, are people like partying in the parking lot? I will say that there was a bunch of people still tailgating, but it wound down by the time we got there, because the doors are at like 4 o'clock on this thing.
Right. Because it's a massive GA situation. So everyone's got to get in there. Yeah.
Yeah. There's two opening bands. Metallica's usually on around 8:30, 8:45, you know. I mean, the amount of empty cans and bottles in that parking lot was just unreal. It kind of made me sad. I was like, you can just bring like a little trash can and throw in the back of your truck?
Don't you guys love the planet?
Geez, metal fans, you don't like the planet?
So are you saying that for us to have a successful kind of parking lot tailgate show, we need to get there like around 2 or something?
I'm kind of thinking maybe like we get to the Detroit venue around 2:30, get set up behind one of our cars, get our table out, ready to go, ready to talk to fans coming into the show. Because I think between like that, like 2 or 3 and like 5 is when people are just partying. And I mean, like I said, there was still a lot of people hanging out and stuff. Like, even if I would have had a microphone with me that night in Philly, I could have walked up to people no problem. But we're kind of hoping to be behind one of our cars with a table set up and talk to people as they're walking by, or other people tailgating near us.
I guess the other complicated thing too is that we can't say too much about it, but we might be doing one of the experiences.
True. Yeah, which is a different.
You go in early for that. You know, so
right. And it could be a thing if we end up getting to see one of the experiences. It could be a thing where we do that and maybe come back out to the parking lot. We're going to suss out all the details for those that are going to Detroit that maybe want to meet up with us.
Yeah,
but we'll let you guys know when it gets closer. but yeah, to answer your question. The vibe was still awesome in the parking lot, even though most people were already in the venue. I didn't even get to the venue till like 7:30.
So when you go in, how did you decide? Because you had a general admission ticket.
Yeah.
How did you sort of decide where you wanted to go? Like, because I noticed you ended up on Kirk's side, right? You were on stage left.
I was before the show started, because a couple guys I work with, new guys on that tour. So we kind of went up onto the Kirk side of the stage in the GA area and met up with, you know, friends of friends, and they were introducing us. And actually what was really cool was one of Metallica's pyro guys, cause there's multiple, is actually a fan of the podcast.
Oh, no shit. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So my friend Wes, who's out here, does pyro and has done it for WWE and numerous tours. His buddies on the Metallica tour doing pyro. And so he came out to say hi to Wes, and we were talking, and right away he handed me like a 4 Metallica fucking pics, and they're rad.
Nice.
I'll post a photo on Instagram of them when this episode comes out, so everyone can see them. But they, like, he didn't really give me any ones that are currently being used. They were like older pics. There was one that was from like the Black Album 20th anniversary tour.
Which in a way is kind of cooler. I mean,
it's very cool. Some of you may have seen, I posted a picture of them on the Metallica forums, and somebody right away messaged me about trading. Dude, I was like, sorry, man. Like, I'm gonna hang on to these, you know, because
you're not in the trading game of that stuff, right?
I'm not even really, I wouldn't even call myself a pick collector. I mean, if someone gives me a pick that's obviously from one of my favorite bands, I'm going to hang on to it, but I don't really seek it out.
Yeah, yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, if it comes up, it's cool. But dude, when you sent me that picture, the first one I gravitated towards was that Black Album anniversary pick. That's so killer.
It's really cool. I'm guessing it was Rob's, because it's like a big old triangle pick. And I don't think the other guys use those.
Don't you play those?
I play bigger, like triangle Claytons. Cool. I just have big gorilla hands and they feel comfortable. But so before the show, we were kind of hanging there. This is kind of right when Volbeat's finishing, which I didn't really care for. Not really my slice of pizza. They were super talented and tight.
Yeah,
and
me neither.
People were going crazy for them, but just not, you know, it's not my taste. This show, Avenged Sevenfold, did not play because their guitar player, Sinister Gates, I guess his wife went into labor early, so they were welcoming their baby into the world.
Right. That's cool. I mean, that's a really big gig to miss, but it's cool that
it is. That's
kind of had that band solidarity around their bud.
Definitely. And, you know, I think that's pretty admirable that he would, you know, put that on hold, obviously, for the birth of their child, which I would hope most people would do.
Well, tours come and go. Your kid's your kid, so.
Exactly.
Kudos to those dudes.
But yeah, we ended up, after we chatted with some of my friends' buddies on the tour, we ended up kind of planting right near Big Mick at front of house.
Oh, so you stayed at front of house. I saw you post that picture of Big Mick.
Yeah, I think if anybody was following us on Instagram, we did a bunch of Instagram stories that day. I was posting a bunch when I could. The service got terrible because there's 60-something thousand people there. You know, Clint's texting me getting pissed, like, send me updates. And I couldn't. I was trying to send so many pictures to you and Paul, like in video clips. And I hated being the guy with his phone up all the time, but I just knew that you guys wanted to see some stuff.
Oh, dude.
I tried.
Well, I have a few questions. Number one, was it a situation where you could have like said hi to Big Mick? Did you say anything to him?
I easily could have. There was like three or four people in front of the guardrail in front of where the front of house console was, and there was like a tent over it. And I mean, when I walked by, I looked over, he was probably 8 feet from me.
Cool.
And I kind of wanted to just yell out, "Hey, what's up, Big Mick?" And I'm sure he gets it every night. But you know, I respect it. He's working. I don't want to, I don't want to be, interrupting him while he's trying to do work. So,
yeah, I think he did the right thing. He did the cool thing.
So instead I jumped over the rail onto the console,
tackled him with
a full beer and spilled it.
I poured a Sunny D orange juice all over the console.
I travel with Sunny D only.
This episode of Metal Up Your Podcast brought to you by Sunny D, Sunny Delight. The real fake orange juice.
That doesn't taste like orange juice.
All right, here's my other question.
Okay. I feel like I'm in an interview now. Am I the first guest?
Well, I wasn't there, and we're kind of experiencing the show through your eyes. So
I know.
Was it sold out? Like, what's going on? What are the stats on this tour with those numbers?
It's tough to tell if it was sold out because... Okay, I will say this. Definitely, like one point during Metallica's set, like, you know, they had like the floodlights on when James was saying something. He was kind of addressing the people up like in the nosebleeds up in the upper level. Mm-hmm. And when they brought the lights up, man, I mean, it looked packed in every seat looked full.
Right, so there were no full-on empty sections.
No, the only sections that are empty are where they actually have to black it out because that stage is so big, it, you can't put it at the very end of the feel. They bring it out a little bit, so there's actually like, you know, a backstage loading dock and things like that to bring the gear up. So
I think they're putting pyro back there too.
Oh yeah, there's definitely pyro coming out from back there. It was all over the place.
Wow.
Now the floor was a different story. Like I don't know what the cap is on the floor of that particular stadium. I would say from the stage to about three-fourths back was jam-packed. By the time you got to front of house, it loosened up a little bit. But, I mean, again, I don't know the capacity down there. And also, you know, these are Metallica fans. Most people are trying to get as close as possible. So,
well, and there's probably, I mean, I don't know this for a fact, forgive me, but I would imagine there's a fire code that does not allow for the GA to be completely packed. Because
exactly.
If something happens, everyone's got to have room to get out.
Because they've even posted some photos online from the first couple shows. And if you look, you can see it looks a little bit more empty back by front of house. There's like a remote little merch stand back there. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's on accident. I think you're right with if there's a fire code thing, plus people kind of cram up to this close they can to the stage, making the back look a little thinner. But I mean, there was a shitload of people there, dude.
And for those of you who don't know, what we mean by front of house just means where the mixing console is. Whoever's mixing the show is
usually
in front of the stage. Yeah.
That's where Big Mick's tent is.
Was he in a tent?
He was in a little tent, yeah. Not a little tent. It's like a big tent with like audio stuff. And there was another tent on the other side of the floor, which has probably had lighting and stuff like that.
Lighting,
video.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're under a tent just in case it starts raining, which it did rain a little bit while we were watching the show, but it wasn't anything annoying. It was just like a couple drops for 10 minutes. And
was the band covered or was the band getting rained on too?
No, they're getting rained on. Yeah, at one point, like Kirk was playing like a solo. I can't remember what the song was. I think it was actually an Unforgiven, which made it even cooler. And it was tough to tell from where I was standing, but when I looked on the video screen, it was totally raining like on him while he was playing the Unforgiven solo.
Very cool.
It was pretty bitching.
Did he play? He debuted kind of this cool new purple guitar at the show the other night in New Jersey.
He did.
Did he play it at your show, the Philly show?
Yes, he did. It's like a purple sparkle. It's kind of like Lars's kit.
It looks awesome.
I don't know if I really like it.
Oh, come on.
I'm not opposed to sparkle guitars. It just looks a little too 80s, I guess. I think it's fitting. Like on a drum kit, I think that looks cooler than on a guitar. But that's just, I don't like those kind of toppings on my pizza. That's all.
And you're gonna hate this too, but I think it just goes good with his like black vest Olive Garden vibe.
It does it does fit with the Olive Garden vibe for sure. But I think it fits Kirk. I think it fits what he's wearing and stuff. Would I play that guitar? Probably not.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Would I play the guitar? Probably not. Could I play the guitar? Definitely not.
If Kirk Hammett handed it to me, I would play it.
Of course.
I wouldn't go buy it. Let's say that.
I'll tell you what. If I do end up getting a snake bite, I'm taking it on my country gig. I don't care what it looks like.
You should.
I'm doing it. I already told our drummer, who's our music director. It's happening. It's just nothing you can do about it.
And then maybe one day if I start playing with you guys, I'll have a snake bite too, and it'll just be metal on stage.
Oh my God. Then we'll be like the band Ghost. Both those dudes have like matching kind of slanted, what do they call those? Like what Jaguars are. And, what do they call that?
What, a Jazzmaster?
Yeah, but like what they call the body of it, like slanted or what do they call
offset.
It? Offset. They have matching ones of those. We would look like that with the old snake bites. I want that Vulture guitar too, which is that new kind of matte V that James is playing.
Yeah. Speaking of guitars, some people may have seen this on stuff they've posted online, but James has this camo snake
bite. The camo
bite.
Snake bite. Oh my God.
Dude, it's so cool. It's
so
cool.
Fucking awesome. Those snake bites have won my heart, man. I love those guitars.
I know. They're great, man. Well, one day you and I'll be in a band actually together, and we'll both play snake bites, and we'll only sound check Metallica songs.
Again, for those of you over at ESP who are listening, we'd love to talk to you about a partnership with the show.
Yeah, we can give you our address to send those camo snake bites to.
Oh, yeah. Happily. Happily. So you're hanging out at front of house, and you've watched Volbeat, and so tell us about the DJ, Mixmaster Mike.
Okay, Mixmaster Mike. I had a couple of friends I was at the show with that were like, dude, this sucks. Why is there a DJ, this and that? And I was kind of geeking out because he was the DJ for the Beastie Boys.
Right.
And I love the Beastie Boys. At first, it seemed a little out of place, but I thought he was doing some cool stuff. Like, he's kind of taking hip-hop beats, and he was only putting in, like, metal songs, like everything from Iron Maiden to some Megadeth to fucking Dio, whatever, AC/DC.
It sounds fun. Fun to me.
I thought it was cool. And, I mean, regardless, there's going to be, like, filler music in between the bands during set changes, so mm-hmm. why not have a dude up there doing something creative and cool? And he's a badass DJ, too. He's not just, like, a guy hitting a space bar.
I think maybe some of the problem is, and this may be a gross overgeneralization, I don't know, forgive me if it is, but I don't think a lot of Metallica fans are kind of hip to the craft of DJing.
It's possible, and if you're not, that's totally fine.
It's totally fine, but there is a craft to it, and that dude is a badass DJ.
He is a badass DJ, and I will give Mixmaster Mike some props. I mean, that dude is going out between bands in front of Metallica's fans.
Right.
With two turntables and a microphone, and especially after Volbeat, everyone knows Metallica's next, and you're up there spinning records. I can imagine
tough.
It's a little
it's
intimidating.
Hard.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that takes balls for sure. And I, from what I've read, like at some of these shows, he's getting booed and shit, which that's tough sauce, man.
It's
that's,
tough
that's
for
hard.
Sure. But he did some cool stuff where like he took like some hip-hop beat that had like two kick drums in a row, and he started like doing this sample thing to it where all of a sudden it sounded like double kick, where it was like digga, 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 and then he like put in like I can't remember what it was. It was an Iron Maiden song over it. And I thought it was bitching.
Man, here's the deal. I think it sounds fun and it's interesting. And you're right. Like, it's either they're going to play some house bullshit or they're going to have a dude that they respect come out and do something creative and different.
Right.
Here's my appeal to our listeners. If it's not your cup of tea, it's totally cool. Don't boo the dude. You know, like
totally.
If you don't want to pay attention, just talk to your buds. But as a dude who's been opening for a band that people were really excited to see and not the band I was playing in, like, you're all there to have a good time. Metallica's coming out soon. No one's going to take Metallica away from you. Well, just get on the ride, have a good time.
Yeah. And here's the thing too. If someone got their wish and Mixmaster Mike wasn't there, the same amount of time would happen before Metallica came on.
Exactly.
It's not like if he goes away that Metallica's going to come on sooner. Like, oh shit, he's not here. Better go on 45 minutes early.
Right. And I know that Avenged wasn't on your show, but it's like, all right, dudes, you're getting Volbeat, which a lot of people like. They're not my cup of tea either. You're getting sure. Avenged Sevenfold. Like, dude, you're getting some cool shit. Like, just be chill. Enjoy this moment, you know?
And I think it also goes to show that the diverse taste that the guys in Metallica have. I'm Absolutely. Sure that they chose him. It wasn't like, Mixmaster Mike, please let me on your tour. I'm sure they chose him to come out and do what he does very well.
Absolutely. It's like all the kind of diverse lineup that they had for the Orion Festival.
Yeah, exactly. You know, where
they had even Eric Church there.
Yeah.
Now, it may not be your sauce, but you also don't have to check it out. I mean, it's just like, I don't know, man. I'm not trying to tell anyone what to do. I'm just, my appeal would be, don't fucking take that booing energy into a place where people are trying to create things for you. It's fucking lame.
And I will say that for those that aren't looking forward to Mixmaster Mike in between bands, don't think of him as like he's this opener, like he's like, he's filler in between set changes. So I will say that it was a good volume where you could listen to what he was doing, but it wasn't like you had to yell at your friend next to you. It was so loud.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you don't like it, just chat with your buddies, go get a beer, go use the bathroom, go get some nachos, you know?
Yeah, just have a fucking good attitude, bro.
Metallica's about to come out and rip your fucking face off.
I know, dude. You should be stoked. All right. So you watch Volbeat. Anything worth mentioning about honestly, poked out to you about Volbeat or event? Just Volbeat?
Well, like I said, we got there kind of late, like about 7:30, and my buddy's friend, who's Hetfield's tech, actually sent him over the schedule. I think they posted it online too. So I knew that Volbeat was finishing at 8. By the time we got like into the venue and stuff, they only had about 15 minutes left. What mm-hmm. I heard, they sounded good. They like are very talented dudes. The crowd loved them. Again, not my slice of pizza, so I didn't really pay much attention to them. I was just, I mean, come on, I'm there to see Metallica.
You know? So, okay, they do this tuning room thing where they send you out a code.
Yeah,
to look at the tuning room on your phone, or do they play the tuning room on the actual screens?
They'll show a couple clips on the screens. You can't hear anything. You just kind of see like the live feed into the tuning room. But okay. So they'll put up like a web address every day, and you go to it. And I think it's only if you're at the shows, and then you can access it. It's a cool idea. I don't know how well executed it is, because once you get that many people into a stadium, the phone service is shit.
Right.
So yeah. I didn't even try to do it. I mean, even before Metallica started, I was having trouble sending text messages and photos and stuff. So yeah, but it's a cool idea. And maybe, you know, someone texts their friend who's sitting at home and they can access and watch the tuning room with a better connection or something. Still a cool idea. You get that little glimpse into the backstage world right before they go on.
Well, I just imagine, I mean, because when I saw them, they didn't do stuff like that. But even if you couldn't hear the audio, I bet that had to have been real thrilling, because they do the tuning room 30 minutes before they come on.
Yeah, well, it was kind of, you know, what we talked about in the Year and a Half Part 2 episode of, you know, it's them coming on the screen in some form, getting people excited. Like when it first showed up, you see the web address, and then all of a sudden you see the feed for like a minute and people started going nuts. It was awesome.
And by the way, a lot of our listeners wrote into us, and because we'd asked, like, we didn't know what that video was that they played before the show. So that video that they played was like part interview footage. It was part of some of the stuff what they did in whatever town they were in.
Right.
Because the night was billed as like an evening with Metallica. So there was no opener. They just played this sort of introduction video.
Yeah.
Or it'd be them like backstage with hijinks and stuff. So
exactly. Yeah, so this was in a similar vein where it just got people stoked. Like, they're coming on soon if they're already in the tuning room.
Have you seen these videos they've been doing after each show? Like, thank you, Philly. Thank you, Baltimore.
It's it's really cool.
Did they play it at the show?
If they did, it was right after I walked out of the arena, because we were kind of trying to beat some of the crowd. We stayed till the very end. Like, we definitely didn't, like, walk out before the encore started. There's no way in hell I was doing that. But, yeah, you know, right when they finish the last song and they're kind of waving to the crowd, throwing drumsticks out, snot towels or whatever, that was the point where, like, all right, let's start heading up the stairs so we can try to get outside. Because we had to take an Uber back into the city, and it took, like, almost an hour to get out of there.
No, I hear you. Okay, so let's go through the set. So was it dark by the time the Ecstasy of Gold started playing?
Yes, yeah, it was. Metallica went on, originally the schedule said 8:45, they went on about 8:55.
Well, you know, they do that Hardwired experience, that's what they're doing right before they walk on.
Right, yeah, they're meeting people and stuff like that.
So maybe those go a little long, they do a photo, and then I think that's the last thing they do before they, like, walk out, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, totally. It was rad, though. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the Ecstasy of Gold is going to play, that's what they've done since the 80s. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know how it is when you go, anyone listening, you go to a concert, and the second the lights go out, you're fucking stoked. In this case, it was like, I mean, it's a stadium. Obviously, there's no roof on this place. The stage is massive. And all of a sudden, every damn light goes out in that place, and it's just so dark. And I just, like, all I could do was just reach over to my buddy next to me and just grab his arm, like, really hard. Like, holy great. Shit, this is happening. Because I hadn't seen Metallica since 2010. And so, you know, the Ecstasy of Gold starts playing. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly clip is on the screens. And let me tell you, if you have gone to the show, one of the shows, you know what I'm talking about. These screens are gigantic. There's four of them. They're fucking huge. And then there's
They look so badass in the videos, man.
Oh, dude, it's cool. And the day this episode is out, I'll probably post some more clips that I took from the show so people can see it. But man, the second that music started playing, you just get chills. I mean, oh, it was so good. And then they did what they have been doing with Hardwired, where they kind of they play the intro to Hardwired, just like they call it the intro tape or whatever. I don't think there's a cassette player back there, but
right.
But yeah, so they do the Hardwired thing, and the second they go into Hardwired, I mean, dude, it was weird. Lars comes out, sits on the kit, kind of puts his hand up in the air, get the crowd going.
Yeah, he comes out first, right?
Comes out first, but then all the other dudes are kind of like, I think they're under the stage, because then all of a sudden, like right when it went to the bum, 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 psh, bum, right into the song, all of a sudden they're just on stage, like they just walked up a couple steps or something, maybe kind of near the snake pit. I never got to get that close to see. But they're definitely coming up from somewhere near the snake pit area, and all of a sudden there's on stage, and dude, right away it was just like mayhem, and it was just fucking, because I mean, it's a great opening song for a set.
How was the volume of the track compared to their actual volume? Was it matched up pretty well?
No, it was actually quieter, which I dug, because it just gave it that extra dynamic going into them starting to play that just kind of blew it up at that point, you know?
Wow.
It was really cool.
How's James's voice out there?
His voice is great. I mean, stadiums are tough, I think, because, you know, even like wind will affect the way the sound is traveling and stuff.
Right. But
like I said, we stood near in front of house in Big Mick. At one point, I even walked right in front of Big Mick, in front of his little tent, to see the difference in the mix from 20 feet away. And there was a difference, and it sounded even better in front of him. But I kind of like the view better where I was kind of in the center. Yeah, I mean, Hetfield's voice the whole show sounded great.
Yeah.
I would even say his voice sounds even better than, like, you know, even during the tour cycle for Death Magnetic.
I agree. I think his voice, I don't know what can account for that. Maybe more rest or more exercises or whatever, but I watched the Quebec Magnetic DVD last week on the bus.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, he sounds fucking dynamite on that, but his voice sounds like, I don't know. It sounds smoother, creamier. I don't know. He's killing
yeah.
it.
Well, I think he's also, I think especially with these new songs, he's, you know, he's still getting comfortable with singing these things, but he sounded more than comfortable singing this stuff. I mean, they did Hardwired straight into Atlas Rise, which was a great, great second song mm-hmm. of the set. He really sounded good on this one. And I know people have talked about it, and they detune now live and stuff. And I think that's so his voice will last for I think it was like 2 hours and 15 minutes wow. or something. His voice has to last that long, obviously, to give all of us a great show. So the detune thing does not bother me at all. But man, he was really sounding strong, and friggin', like, I'll get into it later, but there was a couple little flubs, like they got a little loose on some stuff.
Ooh, really?
But I mean, yeah. Nothing too crazy. I'll get to it when we get to the song and the set. But so, yeah, I'll just kind of keep going down the set list, I guess, and if something pops out, we can talk about it. And I'm sure most of you have, you know, seen the set list they're doing every night. They change a couple songs out here and there, so I felt like we got a pretty kick-ass set in Philly. So I'll go back to the top, Ecstasy of Gold, Hardwired, Atlas Rise, For Whom the Bell Tolls, and right before that, it was pretty cool. I think he does this every night. He kind of says, like, you know, we don't care where you're from, what you've done, what color you are, what religion you are. He's like, you're all part of the Metallica family. You know, all are welcome. And then he goes, For Whom the Bell Tolls, and they kick into it.
Oh,
and it's
man.
Fucking awesome.
Did you get some crab walk delight?
Yep. Yeah. There's some crab walking happening right there on the big screen. but I got to point out too, that on a lot of these songs, and I'll point it out if I remember right. there's really good imagery on the screens. There's like camera feed stuff happening of all the members. And then like on this one, which they have done for a while, there's like these gigantic bells swinging back and forth on the screen. And it just looks so cool and creepy. And for those of you who haven't gone to a show yet, you will not be disappointed on the video content. So then they go right into your favorite track, Creeping Death.
Yeah, which I think this is a slot that they're rotating. So it's cool that you got Creeping Death. I think they're rotating that one with Fuel.
Yeah. Yeah, because Fuel was at the first show, I think, in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think it's Fuel, Memory Remains, and Creeping Death. So, I mean, I love all three of those songs, but Creeping Death would be my vote. So cool that you got that one.
It was rad.
And did they play it super fast?
They played a lot of stuff pretty fast, but I think mm-hmm. honestly, and you know, because you and I have done this kind of stuff, I think it's just genuine excitement and adrenaline. You get out there, and they're not playing a click track. So you get out there, and you're like, "Fuck yeah, we're doing it!" And then all of a sudden, you know. And now I will say Lars doesn't have the best timing in the world. However, he played great this night. But yeah, I wasn't bothered by them playing stuff.
What was
fast
on the screens during Creeping Death? Did they have a video thing for that, or was it just like them playing live, like the Met Club camera guys?
There was a lot. Yeah, there was. It was mostly just the members in the band. Gosh, it's tough to remember every single song in the video content. Some stuff really stood out. Other stuff just blended you know?
So what about this new intro to Unforgiven? What'd you think about that?
I thought it was awesome. It built excitement for it. You kind of had that horn, that snare drum, but they kept showing like clips of the actual Unforgiven video. Man, it was super cool. It just built up the excitement that they're about to play, you know, one of their best songs. And they sounded great on it, man. I mean, Kirk nailed the solo. I thought the tempo was good on this one. James sang great on it. It was really cool.
That's the first Black Album tune of the night.
Yeah, totally. And then after that, they did Now That We're Dead, which sounded awesome. And most people know this now. They're doing this like kind of, I call it a drum circle, even though they're kind of just two drums on either side of the kit. They're these gigantic drums that I think I read they're like handmade by somebody. And they're definitely like they've converted them to electronic drums because there's like four pads on the side that they're hitting.
And they all have different sounds, I guess.
So, yeah, there's just different sounds. Like, you know, I think one of the pads is meant to sound like you would think that drum would sound like. And then there's other little like clicks and things like that. It's you know, these things are really cool looking. They're huge. I mean, they made Lars's kit almost look kind of small.
Well, they had to be big to project in a stadium, you know.
Yes,
they look
exactly
massive.
Yeah, they're big. I mean, you see these four techs kind of bring them out like on the bridge of Now That We're Dead. And, you know, I could have done without it. I thought, you know, fans seem to enjoy it. For me personally, I was kind of like, it's just a little boring.
Was it loud? Did it sound good? Because I feel like for it to really work, they have to be fucking loud. Like you could feel it in your butt loud.
It was definitely loud. It was this big, you know, low end, you know, lower than a floor tom kind of tone.
Right.
And like I said, it sounded cool. I just thought it was kind of like unnecessary, but you know, whatever, man, they've decided to do it. They thought it'd be a fun thing to do. And you know, most fans seem to be stoked on it.
Well, and I think it's cool that they're trying, you know, they're trying to do something cool, you know, like even if it's not landing, it's like, I like that there's a new intro to Unforgiven and, you know, I like these things. Did you see that they played Now That We're Dead on Colbert last night and they did sort of like an abbreviated TV version?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they shortened it. I just watched that right before we started recording this.
It's fucking awesome.
I thought they did great. Hetfield looks all cool in his Motorhead shirt.
They all look great, man.
Yeah,
I was
totally.
I was so proud to be a Metallica fan, seeing them kill
shit
on TV.
Totally.
And man, the abbreviated version works really well. I hate to say that the original version isn't done, but it sounds good abbreviated.
Oh yeah, for sure. They cut out a lot of instrumental parts and stuff, and no, it's perfect for TV. I'm just glad they didn't do the drum thing on Colbert.
All right, so well, like one of those drums would hardly fit in the studio.
Exactly, couldn't get to the door.
So then they do Moth in the Flame. Did they have that kind of dancing flame thing that everyone's talking about?
And how'd it's that look? Really cool. It's just this flame that goes, from my perspective, it looked like it just went back and forth. My buddy Wes that does pyro, he told me that it actually goes like almost like in a circle or an oval. It basically goes like kind of in front of Lars and then comes up front a little bit. But from where I was standing, it just kind of looked like it was going back and forth. But it's a great visual with the content of the lyrics of the song.
Did Wes have any insight over like what that kind of pyro costs to do in a show?
I didn't ask him, but I'm sure it's not cheap.
Yeah, I mean, their overhead on this tour has got to be pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Now, I will say, I mean, there's a lot of pyro. The screens are huge, but there's not like set pieces. All there is Lars's kit and four cabinets on stage.
Yeah, which I'm like, dudes, why even have the four cabs? I mean, really, just four cabinets on a stadium stage?
I mean, they're just there for looks. There's no mics in front of them, you know.
But at least on the Death Magnetic run, they had like, you know, it was like Lars's kit in the middle, and then they had a shit ton of them that kind of divided the stage.
Right.
Which I thought was cool. Like, they could jump on, like, you know, Rob would jump on them and totally play. And
I think it'd be cool if they just got rid of the cabinets and it was just a clean stage, because those video screens, I mean, are so big and they take up so much of your visual during the show. At a certain point, I didn't even like think, oh, there's cabinets on stage. I just was watching them and like all the video content.
Yeah, you didn't think there were cabinets on stage because they only put four of them. I mean, they
totally.
They need to put. I'm come from the Kiss school of just a bunch of empty dummy cabs on stage. I just love the way that looks, man. It's a rock show.
I love the way it looks too. They totally could have
just put that shit up there. It looks great.
I guess I would say, if anything, have no cabinets up there, or just have a wall that goes for fucking
ever. I
totally
agree. You know? Just commit one way or the other.
Either way, Moth and the Flame was cool. When they got to the bridge, every screen had like flames on it, and it was just and the fire was still going. And then on the part like right before he says Moth into the Flame, on the Care at All, these other flame balls would shoot up like right in front of Lars's kit. It was rad.
Wow.
I think I might have got a video clip of that I could send to you.
Did they do any of the pyro that's like up where those balloons were on Moth and Flame, or did they save that for one?
Yes. Oh, I should have said that. During Hardwired, there's those big truss towers at the top of the screens that kind of come out, and these big balloons came kind of inflated, and they had the Hardwired artwork on them. And then I want to say it was during Atlas Rising from the Bell Tolls, like fire went off up there, and they kind of gave the illusion that they had popped, and they got sucked down into this thing. It was really cool.
Nice.
So going into Wherever I May Roam, they did like the intro tape to like the kind of sitar kind of deal, which was cool because
did it sound exactly like this?
Exactly like that. Are you playing the tape right now?
Yeah, I went and got a sitar.
Bitchin'. Yeah. And I mean, they killed Wherever I May Roam. It sounded great. Halo on Fire was so exciting, and James did this really cool kind of made up
new intro.
Yeah, where he kind of does it by himself. He was over on far stage left, one spotlight on him doing this intro kind of ballad type thing. He reworked with the lyrics, and it's rad. And then they go into it, and it was so exciting. And there was really cool video content. Kind of had this girl waking up, like walking through a city. Like it looked like they filmed it like in Oakland. And she ends up in this like fight club kind of place, and he kind of gets her ass kicked by like a dude, which was weird. But then like she kind of ends up going back and like winning, and she's all beat up and has a black eye and stuff. It was rad. Shot really well.
Isn't that from the video? Isn't that the Halo video?
Yes.
How did Kirk do on the outro solo? We all of us are dying to know. Did he do good? Did he kill it?
He did great.
Cool.
I'll say, dude, this whole set, Kirk really did a good job. And there's something coming up I'm going to point out where he didn't do such a good job.
Oh, okay.
But no, I mean, like, I would say like 90% of the songs, I mean, he fucking played perfect.
He seems to have really been showing up a lot, pretty hardcore on this tour. I've been really enjoying seeing him. Look, he looks like he's having fun. He looks like he's happy.
Totally.
At least from what I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, so then from there they do the Kirk Rob Doodle thing, and they kind of played I Disappear, which I thought was super boring. But you know, it gives Hatfield a break, it gives Lars a break.
Well, like how do you kind of play I Disappear? Like which they were doing like brow wow
wow. That's kind of what they kind of just did that, and like
okay.
In a way they would do like they would almost like trading fours, which it's called, where you like you do a little lick for a little bit, then that guy does a little lick for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There was moments where I was like, oh, that was a cool bass lick that Robert did. But overall, I kind of just was like, eh. But to follow that, what was fucking amazing, Robert killed Anesthesia that night.
And he played the whole thing, huh?
He played the whole thing, and what was awesome is like about halfway through when it goes into the that's when all of a sudden they put a big old video of Cliff Burton like headbanging, like that old classic footage, I think from Day on the Green maybe. And it's just him headbanging in slow motion, and dude, it was like chills. The whole crowd started freaking out, and wow. Rob is just playing this perfect. It was a great moment in the set.
That's so cool.
I'd imagine that's happening every night.
Wow.
And then
you get there, another. Dude, then you get another kind of. I think this is when they're kind of changing out with like classic stuff. They'd hit the lights, but you got Motor Breath.
Motor Breath, yeah, which I don't remember if they played that when I saw in Australia, but dude, it was great to see Motor Breath.
Oh, I bet. Well, I saw a video of that, and it looked fucking killer.
It was rad, dude. And then after that, they go into Sabbath True, and they James had dedicated the song to Sinister Gates from Avenged Sevenfold, dedicated to his baby, and kind of said something about, you know, it's great that, you know, new life is coming into the world, a new metalhead is born, and then dedicated Sabbath True to him.
It's like, it's kind of a weird dedication.
Kind of a weird.
Here's a song called Sad But True. happy newborn baby thing.
Maybe, hey, we're sad you're not here, but it's true. You had a baby. That's what I think Hetfield was trying to get across.
You know, people are bummed that that things like Sad But True and Wherever I May Roam are on the set list. And, you know, they're not my first choices, but God damn, those are some monster songs live. I'll take them.
Well, you know, I'll say this about Sad But True. I mean, Hetfield has kind of done this thing now, similar to like the Are You Alive thing he does,
mm-hmm.
where on this one, he's like, you know, you want heavy?
Oh, Metallica gives you heavy, baby.
Exactly. So they do that before Sad But True.
Yeah, I dig it. I like it because then he goes on to play easily, they're heavy as shit, and he's right.
Yeah, so... Exactly. I don't think he means just this one song. So they do Sabbath True, and then they go into One. And, dude, nice.
Everyone's talking about that intro, Pyro.
Dude, I think I text you the clip of that?
Yeah.
I took? Okay. I posted it on Instagram, too. I mean, it's like this extended war battle thing, and there's just pyro everywhere, and it's so cool, dude. It, like, gives you chills. And the big flames that shoot out of the top of the trusses above the screens where the balloons
mm-hmm.
were,
mm-hmm.
those things go up so high. And I was at the, almost like by front of house, you could feel the heat from that, like in that entire stadium.
Really?
Oh dude, you'll see, like when we go to Detroit, wherever you stand, you feel the heat from those things. They burn so hot.
That's crazy.
Oh yeah.
Well, and then don't they like shoot off fireworks and stuff behind the stage?
Yep. Yeah. And there's like full on fireworks going off at the very beginning. It was rad.
So cool. And then the reports I've read have said that Kirk sounds really good on that opening solo of One.
He did a good job. I still don't love his clean tone.
I don't either.
It's just a little thin and brittle. And
biggest band in the world. They can't crack the code on that. It's a mystery to me.
It's weird. He did miss one note on the high part. He like missed that high note. It was kind of funny.
Was that the thing you were saving to talk about?
No, that was tiny. There was another thing that was kind of big.
Okay, all right.
Not huge, but
how, let me ask you this: the blah, 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 how did that? Did they play that well?
Lars got it pretty solid. Every time I've seen live footage of them playing One, that's the one thing that like I'm like here comes the shoes bouncing around in a dryer, because he just hasn't been able to. Sorry, that's what it sounds like to me. It's just, you know, dude, he's 50 something years old. I mean, it's tough. That's, you know, that's triplets right there, and he just hasn't had it down in a long time. But he did it, I'd say like 85. I give him like an 85%, like a solid B on that part.
A drummer friend of mine this week, I kind of been turning him on to Hardwired, and he texted me last night. He like a screenshot of him listening to Atlas, and he was like, "Did Lars really play all this stuff?" And I wrote back like, man, you know, they touched it up the way that anyone does. But I was like, fuck yeah, Lars played all of it. Lars is awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got his faults. We all know this. People love to trash Lars. But I'll tell you what, that guy gave it 110% all night long. And I thought did a great job.
Yeah. And it's like, he's such a ham. It's like, mm-hmm. I know he wishes he could run around the stage like those other dudes, but he's got to just hang on. Did he hop off the kid at all and like walk around?
Yeah, he did this thing where he walks around, like, you know, hitting the cymbal still, and at one point, like, walked out a little further and tossed a stick to somebody. And
love it.
Yeah, it was cool. So,
Master of Puppets.
Oh, another thing I'll talk about before we get to Master of Puppets is on one, they've had that imagery for a while of all the soldiers walking by. So it turns eventually by the end of the song, it turns into, like, you know, skeletons basically. And I don't know if I haven't noticed this before, but at one point there's like the classic Metallica skull that Pusshead did that kind of has the bone cross going through its head. And that's on one of the bodies walking by. It's really cool.
Wow. Just kind Easter of a
total Easter egg. It was great. So then, of course, I mean, God, going from one into Master of Puppets.
Man, you must have been shitting.
Oh, dude, literally, I had poop everywhere. Everyone got away from me. It was disgusting. But, you know, and they did it the same way they've always done it. Like, you know, James will let, he didn't let everyone sing the entire chorus. Like, he sang the first part, and then the next half, he let somebody else, he let the crowd sing, sorry. So that felt cool to, like, be in the crowd and just screaming out the chorus. It was just really cool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going from that, they went into Fade to Black, and they started playing video, like a edited together clip of Through the Never documentary or live show with Eye of the Beholder playing behind it.
Which feels kind of strange. Like, are they pimping the film a little bit? Like, why would they do that?
I think it's just more cool imagery, and I think it's just a way to intro Fade to Black. I don't know why they chose Through the Never and Eye of the Beholder, but it still got me excited. Like, you know, I thought, are they going to go into Eye of the Beholder? But then I realized it's just kind of a little interlude. It went on for about...
Is it just that... Yep,
exactly.
It's just that thing?
Yep.
It's still cool to get a little Eye of the Beholder in the set, even if it's just through a track.
Totally, man.
Because the rumor is that they've been rehearsing it. You know, they might play it.
That'd be rad. Well, that went on for, it was about a minute long. So it was like maybe a little quick break for them and, you know, get some water, whatever they have to do. And then
make a pee pee.
Make a pee pee or poo poo. So at this point, this is where I have to not dog, but just point out a mistake that happened in the intro to Fade to Black.
Oh my God. I can guess where it is.
Not the part of the song you want to mess up, but so James does the normal intro on acoustic.
On acoustic, really?
Did it on acoustic, yeah.
Was it set up like on a stand?
It was on a stand, and it was a nylon string, too.
And was it behind, because that was when they had risers. He would do it behind Lars. Did they just put it in front?
Yeah, he had it kind of almost in like Robert's position.
What kind of guitar was it? Were you able to tell?
I don't know. I couldn't tell. They're not the coolest looking guitars, but I mean, I just don't like single cutaway acoustics personally.
Yeah.
I don't know who makes them. I have to research that. But
how'd it sound?
It sounded awesome.
Good.
It sounded really good. But so Kirk starts the solo. And then all of a sudden he gets like a beat off from Hetfield.
Oh.
And it was kind of like he was still hitting the right notes, but it was, I knew right away, like, okay, I think he's off. And you saw Hetfield like look over towards Kirk. And then he kind of got back into it right before the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. He came back in solid on that. Everything was fine.
You mean he played for several bars, one beat.
Several bars, and he looked a little confused, and Hetfield looked at him like, oh, I think we're off, you know, which is fine. I mean, they're humans, dude. There's a human element to this.
Yeah, yeah.
Things are going to happen, but as a musician, I looked up and kind of chuckled like, hey, I've been there, man.
Yeah. I've definitely been there, but it's still cringy. Like I'm like cringing right now. I'm like, oh fuck.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I'm glad he got back on track for kind of like the hardest part of the solo.
Yeah, he did. He definitely did. And the rest of the song sounded great. The outro sounded really good. The whole crowd was kind of doing the oh, and that was rad.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I'm gonna be one of them doing it for sure.
Oh yeah, we'll be doing it together, arm in arm. Just hammered. So then after Fade to Black, like the lights kind of go out and all of a sudden they kind of reappear at the front of the catwalk in front of the snake pit.
Right.
And then like that other drum kit comes up like on a hydraulic little lift kind of thing. And it's actually an electronic kit, which sounds kind of lame, but they're using it for one song. There's no sense to mic up, you know, what does he got?
Hold on. So what I saw was, it looks like a normal acoustic kit, but they've got these electronic heads on them. So there's a But are you saying that you could tell the sound was, you could tell it sounded electronic and it sounded not great?
The only reason I could initially was because Lars came in and kind of hit the snare a couple times before they started Seek and Destroy. And you, I mean, as someone who plays drums too, I could kind of tell. Plus, I already knew it was an electronic kit. I'd seen a picture of it before. The thing that did sound a little cheesy, because the cymbals were actually electronic. They look like normal cymbals, and I don't know if they're metal or what, but they didn't move the same way as a normal cymbal. There were these little trigger-looking things attached to the bottom of them, because there's no microphones on the kit, obviously.
Right.
And I get they're doing that for convenience. You know, they're probably not wanting their audio team to go run another, you know,
a bunch of wires.
Yeah, totally. And it's just a quick little thing. It comes up, then it goes back down after Seek and Destroy. And James called it like their garage setup, like they were all tight together, like right in front of the fans, which I thought was really cool. And they played Seek and Destroy. I thought it was a little sloppy, but it was still bitching to them to be closer to other people and play Seek and Destroy.
Yeah, and it's like if they are going to do one song that's Sloppy Joe, I kind of want it to be Seek and Destroy. Like,
yeah, totally.
That song, I think that song kind of sounds good loose, you know?
Did you mean
it was sloppy, like not great sloppy, like kind of too sloppy?
I wouldn't say it was too sloppy. It was just kind of loose.
Did they do a long version of it, or did they do a short and sweet?
No, they did the full version of it.
All right, cool. So did they trash can the end of it, or did they?
Yes.
How did they get out of it? Because this is when they leave the stage for the encore.
Yes. Yeah, they do like a trash can thing, and then. And then kind of say thank you to the crowd, and then all of a sudden they all kind of walk off. It's a good long walk back to the stairs backstage.
They're still walking back to the stairs right now.
Yeah, they're still in Philadelphia
back there.
What was awesome was they didn't really waste much time starting the encore. It was probably less than a minute they were back on stage.
Yeah, great.
Which I thought was really cool. I hate when bands sit backstage for like 10 minutes, and you're just sitting there going, one more song, come on, you know.
Yeah, I do too. Because we know you're going to fucking do it. Encores are such a bullshit thing.
I know. What's kind of cool is actually on the tour I'm on, Kings of Leon are not doing an encore. They just play all the songs they would play anyways.
Great. I actually dig it. I dig that vibe.
Oh, I love that. So coming back to the encore, you got Battery. They do the intro tape or whatever, so you hear like that cool the classical guitar stuff. And I like I said before, I like that. It's exciting. It kind of builds it up. They've been doing... that for a while.
That's the third kind of rotating slot where their last two nights ago they did Fight Fire, and I'm hoping they bust out Blackened.
I know that would be awesome.
All three really have that intro music, you know, and it's a great first encore. And I know you're a big, huge Battery fan. You're a big Puppets guy, so.
Oh yeah, totally. No, I was really super stoked. Kirk, I would say, killed the solo, and by killed I mean he played it great.
Nice.
He really did a good job.
The Ripper.
I'm telling you, man. All the fast stuff, he was nailing.
Yeah.
The slower stuff, like I said, on Fade to Black, he kind of got off.
And One.
On Nothing Else Matters, which is the next one. One he did pretty good. Actually, not Nothing Else Matters, on Fade to Black, the second solo, I feel like he just should just play it like the record. He tries to add too much to it. I think it's a little distracting from the original melody of that solo. But whatever.
So he played the intro to Nothing Else Matters?
He played the intro to Nothing Else Matters. Did he play good.
Did he play a Les Paul custom?
Yep, he played his Les Paul.
Love it when he played a Les Paul, I'm guessing, for Fade to Black, too.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Very cool.
And, again, I don't love his clean tone. It's a little too, like we talked about before, but he still played it fine. The whole song sounded great. James killed the solo. And then, of course, they end with Enter Sandman. It's kind of been the closing song lately. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I know people are like, oh, it's overplayed. That's their most popular song. You know, it is, but it sounded fucking great. And the whole crowd was singing Exit Light, Enter Night, and it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way they're not going to do it. They're going to do it. And I totally, totally fucking get it. It's not my first choice for last song.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it on a list, but they're going to, and I get it. Yeah. And I'm on board, and I would have been fucking screaming every lyric with you.
Totally. So what was cool at the end of Enter Sandman is they kind of finished the song, said goodnight, and as they're waving to the crowd, they play like an outro tape of The Freight Ends of Sanity, which was just kind of random, but it was really cool. It was almost like their music over their credits kind of thing.
It's cool.
So that's kind of how they walked off stage.
It's cool to represent some deep cut Justice stuff.
Totally, man.
So... Man, that sounds like a lot of fun, dude. That sounds like a lot of fun.
We're going to have a good old time in Detroit, man. I cannot wait. After seeing that, it's no wonder that people go to multiple shows, because I cannot wait to see it again.
Well, I mean, and here's the deal. Like, this set list is unlikely to change except for those rotating slots, and I totally get it. They're doing a stadium tour. They're playing to a broad range of fans who mostly only know the big hits. So I don't have a lot of expectation that the set's going to be much different than this, but this set is just A-OK with me.
It's fine.
The sauce is good.
Totally. Well, man, I didn't think we'd be this far into an episode just talking about one show, but we did it.
Yeah, we did it. You want to say bye? We can say bye-bye.
Yeah, we can say bye for sure.
You want to say bye?
No, we can say bye now, or we can just keep talking just for the next hour.
Well, we'll do that anyway.
I got nothing to do, so.
man, I got a ton of shit to do, but... next week, we have our first official guest, even though you were interviewed today, but we have our friend Paul Moak coming on to talk about Mr. Bob Rock.
Yep. And Paul, I think Paul actually, didn't he request to do that?
He did. He wanted to do the Bob Rock episode.
Yeah, we had said we would love to have you on the podcast at some point. He's like, I got to do Bob Rock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so for those of you who have, you don't know, or you haven't heard us talk about him before, Paul is a great friend, awesome producer, owns a studio called Smokestack in Nashville. So... good person to have and talk about on the producer.
Yep. And like we said at the top of the episode, if you want to write to us, we read 10 emails an episode. You can write to us at metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. Even if we don't read on the episode, we respond to pretty much all of them. And we love getting those emails. We love hearing those stories.
Yes.
And you guys have already started to sort of write into us about your worldwide experiences. So send us those too. If you're just sitting at home wanting to chat with some nerds about Metallica, write us an email.
We will listen.
And don't forget to do the iTunes review. I hate to keep hammering that. What we're trying to do is we're trying to get to 100 reviews. After 100 reviews, I think we're going to stop talking about it.
Yeah, but we'll just shut up after that.
Which I think we're at 45, 46 now. So
something like that, yeah.
We're getting, out of all the listens we're getting, if just some of you went and did it, it would make sense. We'd hit this 100 real quick. So go do it. We'll send you some free shit.
Yeah.
And
who doesn't want free shit?
I mean, I love free shit if it's good shit.
Exactly.
Don't give me free shit if it's bad shit, okay?
I don't want bad free shit.
No. I want good free shit.
This is good quality made in America shit.
It's real good. It's shit, and it's good.
All right, well, everyone, thanks for listening.
All right, peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.